the blockchain. By now, I think everyone knows that this digital ledger is a critical piece of technology for the future. But why? And when is it going to go from the theoretical to something that's part of our daily lives? Now, while it's easy to get distracted by all of the hype and speculation around Bitcoin, that really is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, as we'll see, the reality is that the blockchain has the potential to completely transform business operations in lots of incredible ways. Today, I'm excited to welcome investor, entrepreneur, and blockchain expert William Mugayar back to the show. We're going to be talking about the use of tokens as mediums of exchange, the importance of trust and how to establish it on the blockchain, and why so-called CryptoKitties are so important to discuss and understand, and more. We'll also get into the future of the blockchain, the kinds of businesses that are most likely to bring it mainstream, and the role that regulation might play in all of this. Then please stay tuned for an episode of Extra Impact, where William and I do discuss the roller coaster ride that Bitcoin has been on in recent months, and the future of digital versus cryptocurrencies. You can access this Extra Impact content through a link in the show notes to the episode. We've got a great episode ahead, so stay tuned. I'm John Pryle. Welcome to the Impact Podcast.
Thank you, John.
And what have you been up to since the last time we spoke?
Yes, I think the last time I was on your podcast, I was on my way actually to the Ethereum DEF CON conference in London, which was a turning event in the history of Ethereum. And then since then, a lot of has happened. Most importantly, I wrote the book, The Business Blockchain, that was published in June of 2016. And since then, I've been speaking a lot on the topic. The tokens have taken off. ICOs are becoming now a very serious topic in terms of raising money. We are in a good territory going forward when it comes to the blockchain.
Just, I don't want to go too deep into it today, but I think it's worthwhile just to bring everybody up to speed, make sure we're all on the same page. Can you just give us a quick recap, please, of what the blockchain is all about?
Yeah, the blockchain is very important because it is putting into question how we transfer value and how we work with intermediaries in the middle of this transfer, mainly the banks. And in the past, we had to go through banks to transfer money, but now with the blockchain, you can transfer money and value from one person to another without going through a trusted intermediary, because the trust now is in the network. All of these transactions can be validated on the blockchain, whether it's an Ethereum blockchain or a Bitcoin blockchain or any other type of blockchain. So that puts into question the whole financial system, and that's a very fundamental threat.
Interesting. But I think for the purpose of our conversation, is it fair that we can talk also about tokens, not necessarily as currency, because you don't talk about the financial systems, but really as mediums of exchange, that perhaps they're representing, you know, the intrinsic value of a system that's been built on top of blockchain. Is that a fair way to think about tokens, to take this a little broader than just fintech?
Well, yeah, tokens are interesting right now because they are at the in the middle of what can change in the business model of companies. So the token is really a way to inject innovation in how companies can be offering value to their customers, to their users. So it's not just about the currency aspect, although the currency is one part of it. Tokens are a way to empower users to create more value for the business itself. So it's a way that companies are embedding the way that users interact with their products. And it's a way to decentralize and share the rewards for the benefits of all of the stakeholders, not just for the benefits of a central point that issued them.
Now, when you say companies are kind of creating value, these are companies that are building kind of layers on top of a blockchain?
The companies range from the infrastructure companies that own the blockchain infrastructure, or at least have a say into its development, all the way up to the application level. And in the middle, in between the two, there's the middleware side. These are sometimes called vertical protocols or horizontal protocols that are very specific. and value is being transferred via these tokens are the as the proxy for the value exchange. And we can get into examples as well.
Okay, before we do, we've got this decentralized thought with blockchain. Now, I as a company can have a database as well. And it's important, I think, for everyone to hear your point of view of the difference between kind of what's a database that might be opened up via APIs versus things that are more published on a blockchain. I'd love your thoughts on
that.
Sure.
So initially, we said that the blockchain threatens the database at its core. And that was very true, because previously everything ran on databases. If you think about it, all the world's applications run on databases. And now the blockchain has come along, and the philosophy behind it is that it's not anymore about the database, it's about the ledger. And now this ledger is, think of it as a spreadsheet that is shared by all the stakeholders. And the minute that you make a change to it, everybody sees that change, or at least those that are authorized to see it. But then the trick now is in how to design these new blockchain applications. Although the blockchain threatens the database, it doesn't replace it. What's important is that you have to know how to design these new blockchain applications and to decide what part and what component does replace the database and what part and what component does not replace the database. So the trick is in architecting the right balance between on-chain and off-chain and centralization versus decentralization.
Let's talk just a little bit about the importance of trust. One of the things that might drive this, and I think this goes beyond digital currency as well. You know, real currency has the backing of a government, for example. Digital currency obviously runs on trust. And if we're going to have a public ledger, that's a different degree of trust than if I have a database where I've got I've got your shopping history in my database. There's a different level of trust. How are things evolving in terms of what the expectations are going to be of where we end up eventually? And I think we're on this journey to this, you know, more and more on-chain solutions. But what's going to be the driver? Is trust, is that a critical part of this?
Yeah, I mean, trust has to be earned, even in the blockchain world. So you can't just say now we don't need the existing trusted intermediaries that we know about. Every new blockchain application, every new blockchain protocol has to earn the trust of its stakeholders as well. Once they earn the trust, then it can evolve. But the first level of trust is about validating the transactions. So it's about making sure that a transaction that has left point A can arrive at point B without having anybody in the middle being the intermediary that checks the transaction and delays it maybe, or taxes it, or imposes other conditions on it. So that is the first level of trust. And from there on, then you can build on that level of trust into identity trust, into other types of more sophisticated transactions. But at least the very minimum that blockchains enable us to do is to transfer value without having anyone in the middle be that transport layer. The blockchain can build from then on.
You know, we sort of take digitization granted in some spaces. You know, it's there in media, whether it's the newspapers or music, movies, books. It's all digitized. We're even seeing digitization hitting the fashion industry via Data Collective that we talked about in a recent podcast. But I'd like to talk about another emerging digital frontier with you that ties back to your Ethereum connections, and it's really talking about, you know, taking a contract and codifying it into this digitized smart contract. What does that really
mean?
Right.
So the three levels of disruptions that the blockchain enables are, one, technical. We talked about that, the database. Second is the law. So the blockchain can disrupt, is at the early stages of disrupting law. So that's where smart contracts can come in. And smart contracts is a fancy word for just putting business logic around certain conditions. But now there is money involved. So it's really a series of if this, then that, but with money changing hands if certain conditions were to take place or if certain conditions were to be checked. So what the blockchain can do is allow a certain logic to enact the consequences of the of this these conditions being met or not met. And we're not used to that. We're not used to putting a lot of automation on conditions where there's money involved. We're used to having checks in the middle and having somebody call us on the phone and say, did you make this transaction? Do you want to make this happen? And now there's the good and the bad, obviously, that can happen. If you write a smart contract without the proper security controls, or if you write it badly, I mean, anyone can write a bad program that can expose security concerns. But now we have money involved, and that's why we had some accidents happen, like with the DAO, the Distributed Autonomous Organization, that the DAO that tried to be overly ambitious in how money was going to change hands by having votes, by having conditions being met automatically. So we have to be able to kind of walk slowly before we can run. But smart contracts have a chance to disrupt at least a part of the law that we know about today. But it has to be done in small steps. And the third level that the blockchain disrupts, which we started to talk about earlier on, is the business models. And this is where the tokens come in. So think of it as three levels: the database, the law, and the business models.
So let me stay on the law a little bit, because I'm interested, because businesses, obviously, there's a lot of automation in businesses. You know, business process automation has been around for a while, and we outsource business process management. And now I hear you think, I'm thinking about what you're saying, and we think about the transaction that's now being executed on the blockchain, that I'm transferring value from A, from you to me, or from person A to person B. And now I've got, as a traditional IT shop, I've got business process management running, but I never thought about it. Is it okay to consider, or perhaps appropriate to consider, that this, at the last step of this contract, or at the last step of me managing this system, it's the last mile that I've got the business process management going, and then I have to give it to the last phone call or the bank. But if I've got the smart contract written at the very end point of my logic, the money can go from A to B, because everything else has been validated along the way. It's almost making a stronger connection between two endpoints that are not in the same IT system. Is that a fair way to think about the contract, or am I way off base here?
As you said, businesses have been used to doing business processes automation from one company to another, between partners. But there was always the issue of trust and compliance. And typically, partners don't trust each other. That's why they put these processes between each other. And usually, there's always a third party that has to validate.
And lots of lawyers.
But one business case for the blockchain between businesses is to enable the guarantee of business processes going from one place to another. Think of it as the traceability, to ensure that there is traceability within the privacy and security considerations, obviously, and that there are companies that are offering solutions to do that.
And that goes back to what we talked about earlier, and that brings a high degree of trust, of course. So a funny example, but I still think it's appropriate, because we talked a little bit now about the blockchain itself and kind of the law and managing it. I would love to get and I'm going to apologize to the audience who've never heard this before, but I'd love to kind of get your sense of CryptoKitties and how we can use that as an example. Because, somebody may say it's ridiculous, some say it's not. But from my mind, we have an opportunity where an app is there. There's value being transferred in coins. I think it's Ethereum, so it's Ethers. This is now going beyond both the blockchain, the DNA of a kitty, and maybe a smart contract for transferring value. I don't want to go too far. I think it's appropriate to ask you to kind of explain this a bit for us, as I think it's a great case study.
Sure. So the CryptoKitties was the first large-scale application that that took off last December, December of 2017. But it really represents a major trend that is going on right now with the blockchain, which is about digital assets, native digital assets. So if you think of money, we started with discussing the fact that money now can change hands. But if you dumb it down, money, what is money? When it's digitally represented, money is just a form of value. But value that is digital is not just money. It could be another kind of asset. In this case, it's a digital asset that is a unique asset in the form of a kitty, of a cat, that has very unique.
And it's a cartoon character with colors and patterns on the fur. For those that haven't seen it, we'll put a link up to this on website.
Yes, so it's kind of it's the beanies of the digital world.
A beanie baby.
A beanie, yeah, baby. But every beanie is different. Every beanie is unique. So beneath that, there is a standard called the non-fungible standard, which is allowing this exchange. And let me explain that. There are two components here at play technology-wise. One is the fact that these assets are native to the blockchain, meaning that they only exist on the blockchain. There is no equivalent to the CryptoKitty outside of the blockchain. So if you leave the blockchain, if you're not online, you cannot see these CryptoKitties work. They have no real-world equivalent. And the second part is that there is this non-fungible standard. Non-fungible means that every asset is unique. The contrast is money. Money is fungible. Like if you have a $20 bill and I have a $20 bill, if we exchange those two bills, if I give you my bill and you give me your bill, it's the same. I still have $20. It's fungible. It means it's interchangeable. But if I own Kitty A and you own Kitty B, and each one has a different color, has a different DNA, then if I give you my kitty, I don't have that kitty anymore. You have my kitty. If you give me your kitty, you don't have yours anymore. So it is non-fungible. So imagine now we can do this not just with kitties. We can do it with anything. Imagine it. It can be done with, initially it's taking off in the gaming sector. It could be a kitty one day. It could be a tank another day. It could be a zombie. It could be any form of
The assets that people purchase with in the multiplayer games, right? They're right. The people are purchasing assets
exactly,
and they're sitting today on a database somewhere, probably on the company that owns the game.
Correct. And now the future is going to be we're going to be interacting with these digital assets that are native to the blockchain, and we'll be able to trade them seamlessly. So then you can extend that to having another application of this non-fungible asset exchange. Think of it as art.
And the digitization of, let's say, land records, which is happening in some countries, once it's digitized, this land record or this transaction of me selling you a particular piece of property, once it's digitized, it really is probably more permanent than a piece of paper sitting in a town hall somewhere.
Sure. So we're going to see this coming from two directions. The first direction is to digitize the existing physical assets that have already been built. So you take an existing building or an existing house or an existing office, and then you say, I'm going to fractionalize half of it. Or you can start to do that with the new ones that haven't been built yet. I have more hope for the new assets that have not been built. So imagine a new building that's just going to be completed, let's say, at the end of this year. And its ownership and in all of its aspects is only available on the blockchain. Or a new division, a new subdivision that's building 1,000 homes, and the ownership is only available on the blockchain. Then you, as a new owner, have no choice. You have to buy it on the blockchain. So I have more hope for native assets that just emerge in the same way that the CryptoKitties did not exist before outside of the blockchain, and see how they took off because we have no other choice. So I'd like to see more native assets that are just created on the blockchain and have no other equivalent. And that's going to drive more usage.
This is a great way to kind of come to the last part of this piece, which is talk about your kind of practical examples for businesses. And you made the point earlier about, look, this is a journey. We're going to start small and work our way through this stuff. So first comment, which I think you're going to agree with, nobody is going to take SAP or any giant ERP system or supply chain system and in the next 2 years convert it to blockchain. Not going to happen for performance reasons, not going to happen because of practicality reasons. Is fair? Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, it's because legacy is very difficult to change. Existing systems are hard to change. They will change over time. But it might take 10 years. It's going to be a stepwise change. So that's not where the innovation is going to happen. That's not where the big change with a big C is going to happen. The biggest change is going to happen with new systems where there's no friction, where there is no resistance to change, where the users have no choice but to use this new way of doing business, this new way of interchanging, interacting with assets. So that's why I have more hope for these new models with the startups. Startups are going to really bring this change along a lot faster than to expect it to come from the big companies.
Now, do you think it'll happen in a business-to-business environment where a business says, look, here's the value that I'm going to be able to transfer you to, I'll transfer to you, it's some new type of asset, digital asset that I'm going to convey to you, maybe it's a supplier and a distributor. I'm not getting in the world of supply chain necessarily, but two businesses that need to interact, perhaps in the sharing of data, I'm giving you access to data and you'll return something to me for that value. Or will it be in the B2C side where I, the consumer, perhaps own my data? We surely haven't crossed that threshold yet. I'd love to the point where I own my data and all the social, every other company that uses it pays me. Do you see this thing going to break through in B2B or B2C first? Where do you think this is going to happen next?
I think the innovation, the excitement is going to be more tilted towards the B2C. I'm not saying it's two different outcomes. Like the B2C, it might take longer to get to a million users in a particular application, but the usage cases will be more innovative. Again, using like CryptoKitties as an example, or even Open Bazaar for B2B commerce, or using Steemit as a way to get compensated for your attention. So instead of going on Facebook and spending an hour per day and not getting anything back, and knowing that you are giving them their data, you're not getting anything back, you go on Steemit, you publish content, and you earn tokens because somebody gave you attention. Somebody upvoted your content. Of course, Steemit does not have the millions of users that Facebook has, but it's already given back $25 million in rewards to its 100,000 users. What has Facebook given us? Nothing, zero.
So the business to business shouldn't necessarily be thinking about the blockchain as I have one of these, I need to use it. What they need to think about is, who am I dealing with? Who am I interacting with? And are there different and innovative ways I could kind of have a different view of the digitization of that interaction? And if so,
exactly,
then I can think about how I would apply that in a blockchain manner, perhaps.
Exactly. They should look inside. They should look at their existing processes. It could be in the area of workflow management. It could be in the area where there is a need for traceability. Maybe there is no real-time traceability, and they can use the blockchain to inject this real-time audit trail. Or it could be a case where they have high operational costs and they can lower them maybe by lowering the transaction costs. So look inside and try to use the blockchain to improve processes, to re-engineer ones. And you don't have to necessarily change your business.
And if you do need to work with other companies, I don't, we've seen Hyperledger with at least 15 companies working together for an instant. It's more in the fintech space, but there are ways that companies should think about working together.
Definitely. That's the starting point. Especially big companies already have existing partnership relationships, but they should reassess the costs of these relationships and whether the blockchain can facilitate the lowering of the costs of these relationships. I mean, one other example is simple bank transfers. I mean, this is where Ripple is trying to make a dent in the space. As you know, today the de facto system for moving money around between banks is the SWIFT system. SWIFT has 7,000 financial institutions as their members, but it is expensive. If you want to do a wire transfer, it can cost anywhere from $15 to $80 on a case by case basis. And Ripple is challenging SWIFT. And if Ripple succeeds, they could be the next SWIFT, because they are offering to do this on the blockchain at a fraction of the cost and at an order of magnitude of the speed.
So, you know, obviously regulation is something that's always kind of looming over most of this new technology. And for the first time, we're even hearing regulation back on Facebook. But in terms of where some of this currency movement is going to be, and perhaps business to business interactions, how's regulation going to kind of affect all these pieces?
That's a very good question. Regulation is a big, big topic today when it comes to the evolution of the blockchain, the evolution of cryptocurrency, how ICOs are going to come into play. And the reason is that the blockchain and cryptocurrencies are very global by nature, whereas most of the regulators, their job is local. So there's this challenge that they have. And the problem that most of them are trying to grapple with is to apply the existing regulation on the blockchain space. And that is where that is where the flaw is. That is the easiest thing, which is what they are doing. They could say, well, they are saying, well, we already have regulation. We have the securities regulation, which started in 1933. So let's apply that, because they see cryptocurrency as a security type of instrument. But that's easy, and that's a bit of a cop-out. What I'd like the regulators to do, which is more difficult, is to update the existing regulation or create new regulation that is really more forward-looking, that takes into account the fact that the blockchain and cryptocurrency is this new type of asset. It's an asset class that did not exist before, that you cannot really apply decades-old regulation to it. It's because the token or the cryptocurrency could have not just a payment aspect as a function. It could also have a utility aspect that did not exist before. So maybe they should freeze any regulation. Maybe they should have some safe harbors for cryptocurrency. I mean, you can't apply adult rules to babies. Cryptocurrency is just in the baby stages. Let it evolve and become an adult before you can give it the adult rules of the security space. And that's kind of what I'd like to see. Ideally, if they can harmonize global regulation over currency, over cryptocurrency, then anybody in the world, any entrepreneur in the world, would have clarity as to what they can or cannot do. But that, I think, is wishful thinking.
Excellent. So a CEO shouldn't be thinking about, I'm going to do a blockchain project. CEO should be thinking about the business value that could be provided, whether they're interacting with a consumer or a business.
That's correct. They have to look inside and then see how they can improve what they are doing today. And that's going to keep them busy perhaps for the next 10 years.
That's enough for now.
Yes.
Yeah. Perfect. So that's William. Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Anytime, John.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.